The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson, I'm your host. If you're listening to the podcast, it is Thursday, August 4th. We creep closer and closer to the start of the 2022 NFL season. If you're watching the podcast on YouTube, youtube.com/pick6. You can, it is Wednesday, August 3rd. And joining me to talk about some NFC North burning questions, as well as lighting candles for a goat, Tyler Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Will? And by the way, if listeners are obviously listening to this podcast on Thursday, football is back. We've got the Hall of Fame game.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't be more excited. Actual football. Trevor Lawrence won't be playing. I don't think we'll know any of these people that are playing, but football will be played when you're listening to this podcast on Thursday.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to Tom Brady's birthday. Does this mean that, so the Deshaun Watson news came out on Monday. The NFL has 3 days to appeal. That means they have to, it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. That they have to, like, the NFL is appealing. Wilson and I talked about this. The NFL appeals, and then Roger Goodell's like, oh, you appealed. Well, yeah, I'll make a ruling. And, like, that's the process. I believe Thursday is the deadline.
So you're saying kickoff of the Hall of Fame game will just conveniently be a time that they're going to say, hey, we're appealing this.
I think they would probably have to file it by 4:30 p.m. or something like that. But I don't know that there's – I don't know what the exact – maybe it's just – I assume it's 3 business days after the ruling comes out.
Sure.
So you get Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I mean, that has to be by end of business on Thursday, I would guess when it is. So I would think that the news will come out if they are appealing first thing in the morning, because you wouldn't want to do a 4:30 news dump with the Hall of Fame game that night.
That's true. But it's also like not – if you're the NFL, is this something that you're like dumping? Like is it – you're going to probably look good, right? Like That's true.
That's a good point.
It's not like it's bad. It's not like, you know, unless they're saying it's good enough, we're fine. Like they're going to get blowback.
Maybe I'm misreading. I mean, I guess I'm so used to people being mad about Roger Goodell doing punishment stuff that I'm, you know, it's like, oh, you got to hide it here. Maybe it is. You come out and like first thing in the morning, you announce like, hey, this is happening and we'll find out when it, you know, and then in theory, if you did. So that's also why if they're going to hammer Watson, maybe it won't be on a Friday. It'll be on like a Monday morning. Mm, yeah. You come out and you say, hey, we wanted a year. We're giving him a year. Tough break, Cleveland Browns. I remain more and more convinced that they are going to, the NFL will appeal this.
Yeah, I think so too. But it is weird, right? Like you go through all of that to just have the power to do what you wanted to do anyways. Like it does feel a little backwards of how we're getting to this.
It's like taking your It would be like taking, like if you have a water dispenser on your fridge, you know, I mean, you know, a lot of the, you know, pretty standard. I mean, not pretty standard, but pretty common on fridges. And you took that and you filled up a Brita water filter with like the water from your fridge. It's like you're unnecessarily filtering this product. It's already filtered. Like you don't need this filter to make it's nobody feels better about this. And the other thing too is like the way that Sue Robinson ruled on it, basically saying like, you know, if it weren't for the bizarre NFL precedent of bouncing all over the place, I would agree with the year long suspension, which anyway, leads me to believe that I'm curious when Thursday you batten down your hatches, depending on when you're working shifts, Sully.
That's true. Well, yeah. I'm working the game, so at least they'll be okay. I'll be in Foxborough, I believe, but then I'll be working the game too. Okay, so, yeah, so I'm okay. I am out of this.
There you go. A Hall of Fame game is on Thursday night. Jags and Raiders. Watch out. It's a scorcher.
When these two squads get together, man, I mean, come on.
Anything's possible. Yeah, I mean, I don't even really like care who players in the Hall of Fame game. I said this to Wilson. Like, I don't want to come off as like, you know, like I'm enthusiastic about football. I freaking love football. I'm not ready for it quite yet, I don't think.
It always just feels so far out from actual preseason that it doesn't even feel like it's a part of the process, if that makes any sense, right? Yeah, like
it makes total sense. And I don't want to say I've grown to ignore it, but like, you know, if the Hall of Fame class is compelling, I'll watch the ceremony. I'll watch the game because it's like, oh, hey, football. But I'm not like, I don't consider this a big milepost in the offseason preseason.
Well, especially when, you know, teams kind of treat it the same way. We know Trevor Lawrence isn't going to play. I doubt you're going to see anybody significant for the Raiders. I mean, I haven't heard if they're going to do anything. Really, the storyline for that game is going to be Doug Peterson taking over the Jaguars after Urban Meyer and then Josh McDaniels heading the Raiders. I mean, it's two teams moving on from head coaches that were, you know, had weird circumstances ending their tenure, and now you have stability, or what is perceived to be stability, at those spots. Now that's all you're really going to be looking at. But really, what are you going to learn? You know what I mean? That's the biggest question for me, is what are you going to learn from these games? A lot of these preseason games, we will see stuff. I just don't know if that's going to be the case, and it really hasn't been the case in these Hall of Fame games.
Yeah, and you know, like the Jaguars are in this. Like, I mean, guess it's like Tony Boselli, you know, like try and tell. Oh, I will say, I'm desperately hoping that Tony Boselli forgets to thank Pete Prisco in his Hall of Fame speech. Because Pete is adamant that Boselli's going to thank him.
Okay.
Because Pete has pounded the table and harassed voters to get Tony Boselli in. And he finally gets in. He did get in, right?
He's
in,
right? Yeah, he's in.
He's one of the guys.
Imagine.
Sure, yeah. He's in, right? I actually think it would be cool. Like, he's going to – I don't think Pete's, like, presenting or anything, but I'm pretty sure Pete's going.
Okay.
And like, he's going to give, I mean, by all accounts, he's like going to be like one of the first like 10 people that Tony Boselli gives a shout out to, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Pete was the one. I mean, there are, you know, in the respective markets, he is the one that makes the case. I'm assuming
he's not on the voting committee.
Oh no. Okay.
Yeah. That's the thing, is he would just go to like at the Super Bowl or the combine or like whatever NFL or the owners meetings, he would just constantly harass these Hall of Fame voters to get Boselli in. Like he was like the personal, like, just like, he would just harass everybody. Oh yeah. And then Richard Seymour, I guess, is the, I mean, there's just, it's, I mean, look, frankly, it's not a very good class.
Yeah. That helps. You know what I mean? With guys that have been on the bubble for a while, that obviously.
No, I mean, it's like not a very intriguing like class to watch from an induction standpoint.
Yeah.
I would never say live on YouTube or this is, maybe we're not live on YouTube, but whatever. I would never say on a recorded line that I, a professional football writer, am not going to watch a Hall of Fame game or ensuing or the Hall of Fame ceremonies. That wouldn't be professional of me. However, if something, you know, maybe I've got like some parenting thing I got to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
I got Richard Seymour going in. You know, that will be interesting.
Yeah, there you go. Is he, I guess, I mean, is he the only connection? Yeah, never mind. Anyway, carry on. You're not going to get anything from this game. Yeah. And I do think one thing to note, too, is that coaches have become increasingly, I feel like, especially these younger coaches, increasingly willing to sacrifice preseason reps for their starters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all, you know, as we go into the preseason now, I mean, you know, with this game, we still are ways away from that stuff going on. But it is it's the second year of the third preseason game, you know, or the three preseason games. And I feel like we still didn't really know how teams are going to handle it too, right? Is the week two the dress rehearsal? Is week three the dress rehearsal?
And week one or week four?
Teams kind of did it in different ways too. So it will be interesting from that regard to see when we see the actual teams and the stars.
God, yeah, that was weird. And it's also like, yeah, I mean, yeah, last year was so bizarre too, because you're coming off 2020 and it's like, oh my God, this preseason is amazing. Like, we don't have sweat football happening. Like, it's amazing. Anyway, I know what we're talking about, but we're just sort of, I'm prattling on. We should be prattling on about Tom Brady. It's his 45th birthday. He turned 45 on Wednesday. Of course, our incredible research team, or just Deba, fired up. I think it's the research team, fired up a massive document for it. What is the Tom Brady will become when he will pass Steve DeBerg, who started a game at 44 years, 279 days, when he starts in week one, becoming the oldest quarterback ever to start a game in NFL history. And he'll be doing it coming off a season in which he led the NFL in passing touchdowns. Just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's pretty good at this whole football thing. But he made it. I mean, he made it. 45 was the benchmark for a decade, really. And everybody,
Say 40 at first, and then it changed it to 45 once he got to, like...
It's a good question. I don't know. But I just, predominantly it's been, 45. I mean, the dude's even joked around about 50. So, like, who knows? But, like, 45 has been the number that a lot of people have circled. Brady himself has specifically circled. Almost didn't make it because he retired for, like, 40 days this offseason and decided to come back. But, that is a remarkable feat to be considered, an MVP caliber quarterback going into your age 45 season. Now, is this going to be it? Are we going to enter that final year of Tom Brady? Is this the send-off? Who knows? But, again, he's still at the top of his game. He's coming off a ridiculous season statistically, and the Buccaneers are one of the teams that are legitimately in the Super Bowl conversation. So, again, it's just remarkable about where he's at.
Yeah, he is George Blanda, 26 seasons played, Morton Anderson, 25, Vinatieri, 24, John Carney, 23, and Gary Anderson, 23. Tom Brady right behind them at 22. You'll note that all of those other guys are kickers. George Blanda also played quarterback, but these guys kicked. You can hang around forever when you're kicking. You can't hang around forever when you're playing quarterback. He is 32 games shy of breaking Adam Vinatieri's record for most games played, including the playoffs. Vinatieri at 397. So if Tom Brady were to make the playoffs and play two regular seasons. Now with 17 games, he would break it.
I believe he's zeroing in on 100,000 yards passing, combined playoffs and regular season too. Outrageous. Realistic.
Yeah, just outrageous. I mean, he's been to, stat where it's like, here's Tom Brady's three Hall of Fame careers. Like, he can go to the Hall of Fame three times.
Yeah.
My parents actually live in North Carolina, and my one of their cousins is a Panther season ticket holder. Was like, you can pick any game you want to go to except for these two. And they hadn't taken off the box. So do you think that's a good choice? I was like, yeah. Like, who cares what the score is? You get to see Tom Brady. Like, you might see Tom Brady's like one of his final 16 games, 17 games.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
At the very worst, you're going to see like one of Tom Brady's final 34 games.
Right, exactly. And, never seen him before, they're big football fans. That's, you don't have that many opportunities.
I was telling my dad, I was like, look, like, I probably take it for granted. I've seen Tom Brady, 10 times, mostly like, in Super Bowls. And
good for instance, like, I'm a Celtics fan. I don't like LeBron, but when he comes to town, I'm like, I got to go see that. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a good environment, but it's also like he is one of the top two, five greatest players, if not arguably the best player in NBA history. Like, you got to go see those legends when they're around.
Yeah. I played basketball with LeBron James, fun fact.
Okay. All right.
I won't tell the story now.
How'd you do?
I tried to take a charge and he literally jumped over me.
Right.
Yeah. He's, well, first time he stopped and I stopped like a quarter inch from my face. He was on the opposing team. It was like a last minute surprise thing. It was like a bunch of like people like me and you and then LeBron. And he was just like, it was like treating it like you do like fifth grade. If you're playing like an adult, like, he's just like one guy tried to throw a layup and LeBron put the block like in the other side of the gym. Just like didn't like lightly tap it. Just absolutely pummel that thing.
Unbelievable.
But I stole the ball. LeBron got a rebound and was coming the other way. And I like sprinted back and like sit there was like trying to take a charge. Like whatever. Like it'll be, he's not going to run through me. I mean, yeah, if he does, I'm rich.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. If he runs through me, I'm a rich, rich man. Worst case scenario, he just like embarrasses me. And sure enough, he stopped like this far from my face and just looked me in the eye and finger rolled the ball into the hoop. And then I tried to do it again. He jumped over me and did his signature dunk. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It was in this high school gym too.
Wow, sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, let's. Is there any more news that we have to get to?
Well, I mean, you know, Brady's got the tampering thing going on with the Dolphins. I'm sure you guys covered that. Yeah. All.
Actually, you know, I didn't do the show yesterday.
Okay. All right.
So let's, since you as a Brady guy, let's. It is kind of funny that like the day before he turns 45.
Hilarious. Yeah. The timing of that couldn't have been any better.
I know. So obviously, I think Wilson and Breach, maybe. I don't know. Is that right? Okay. Obviously didn't listen to the show on the way home. They broke it down. I mean, look, I thought that, I mean, my personal take was that Brady got off a little light here because, you know, he was willingly talking to the Dolphins, even though I don't think he necessarily violated anything, and that the Dolphins got off really light for the tanking stuff. And that the NFL probably was more than willing to hammer the Dolphins over the tampering stuff in order to cover up the tanking stuff, and loved the idea of firing out all this news about the Dolphins and Brady and all that shortly after the Deshaun Watson suspension news. Like it's very, very, very NFL of them. Like it's all, if you do this long enough, it's very, you see this stuff. It's like very transparent how they're approaching it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, for sure. Definitely getting off light on the tanking stuff. You know, that in, you know, they lose a first round pick in 2023, which I was a little confused. What did they trade? I should have looked it up, but it's my mistake. What did they trade for Tyreek Hill again? Was it not a first round pick?
Yeah.
I'm just assuming Adams went for,
Tyreek Hill went for 2 2s.
Was it 2 2s? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought a first round pick. So, well, okay.
They still had 2 firsts. They had their own and then San Francisco's, and they just lost their own.
Yeah.
And then they gave up the 2s for, and they had 2 2s already, I think. And they gave the 2s to KC for Tyreek Hill.
Okay,
but yeah, that's not an. It's, I don't think it's unusual to suggest that Tyreek Hill also commanded a first.
Yeah, No.
They got a first. They got a 2022 first. Oh, they traded before the draft. That's the thing.
Oh, okay. So okay.
Oh yeah. So the Dolphins had 2 firsts in 2022, 2 firsts in 2023.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, so, they actually only gave up a 4th and 6th round pick in next year's draft. So they still have their picks for next year.
Yeah. And so, you know, we talk about, this, you know, with Tua going into a pivotal year, that's not great. Like, you know, as much as we talk about like, oh, could Brady possibly go there? Obviously they've had communications about that, but like if Tua bottoms out, you now lose an avenue to find yourself a quarterback next offseason. So that,
you don't have 2 draft picks to trade up and get.
Right.
A high priority pick if Tua is not good.
Yeah.
So and that's, Tom Brady's less likely to come now because you have one less first round pick.
And not only that, like, let's just say Tom Brady wants to continue playing. Like, can he still go there? Like, yes, he technically can.
It would be a bad look. The NFL
that's a really weird look if all of a sudden he just signs with them in the offseason, which is something that's been negotiated dating back to August of 2019. And like you were saying, too, you know, Brady obviously gets off a little bit easy here, which I do find fascinating. Like, you know, I we both have, like, contracts with CBS. Like, we can't go talk to other and do work for other outlets. You know, there are certain non-compete with
multiple teams.
And he's, you know, so I'm sure the NFL has similar non-compete type things. And so it is interesting how, you know, that's not a focus there for Brady as well, you know. So, you know, again, it just continues the weird ending for Tom Brady in New England. You know, already planning it as early as documented wise, August of 2019, going into his final year with the team. Yep. And for a guy that is very centrally focused on the present and winning, yeah, I was off the ball at least for 2019, and it reflected that. I mean, the Patriots were 8-0 to begin that year, and you wouldn't have known it looking at Tom Brady. I mean, I think that's one of those things where the quarterback was checked out for that final year.
Interesting. Wow. Sharp barbs from Sully on his.
Oh, yeah, I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah, hey, no, look, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, and it's weird too because like Stephen Ross is a Michigan guy.
Yeah,
so like he has enthusiastic internal approach to trying to acquire Tom Brady and get Tom Brady on his team. From a Michigan standpoint. So. Yeah.
One of the funniest tweets I saw from the day of that news coming out was, I forget who posted it. I probably should just retweet it. It was somebody taking a picture, a screen grab of the ownership of the Dolphins, but it was the Fergies, the Serena Williams, the Mark Anthonys, and they were like, I want to hear from ownership. I got a good laugh out of that one.
I do really think, though, that that the NFL was more than happy to crank up the tampering aspect of this. Because you read what they wrote about the tanking aspect of it, and it's very clear that, where they said that it was like, what was the phrase? It was like, however phrased, such a comment was not intended or taken to be a serious offer, nor was the subject pursued in any respect by Mr. Ross or anyone else at the club. It's like, well, you're like creating intent. And then they also said that Ross, that he basically was like, he said that the draft should take priority over the team's win-loss record. And then it was like, they're like, but many of his comments could be construed in different ways based on your approach and belief system. It's like, all right, you guys think they tanked and you don't want to admit it because then it looks really bad for the integrity of the league. So instead you just like hammer them for tampering in a way that would have probably been close to the tanking punishment.
Not only that, you don't want to, sully the, reputation or whatever, but you would be shaking the foundation of one of your franchises. Like the tampering thing, you can take away draft picks. It's very
tampering easy. Tampering happens all the time, and you're just
and it's easy to punish.
Yeah,
this would be in line for an unprecedented punishment. Exactly. You're talking about a forced sell. You're talking about a change in ownership. You're talking about a multi-billion-dollar transaction in the NFL, which is just, again, it's something that's unheard of.
And by the way, Brian Flores' lawsuit, we said this at the time. We weren't trying to we intimated it at the time. I think it holds more water now. I'm not suggesting that. Should I phrase this correctly? So, Brian Flores, the way that Brian Flores' lawsuit blew up was because of the minority coaching hiring practices.
Yep.
That's what he led with that, and that got the headlines. But, and I specifically remember calling this. It's sort of like, and I'm not saying he doesn't believe that that's true. I think he does. I just don't think that he feels he's going to get anywhere. What are you going to get out? How much is that lawsuit actually going to be able to work out where you can prove that there are, actual malicious intent, et cetera. But it does serve as a really, really effective Trojan horse for tampering and tanking claims against the guy who fired you.
Yes.
And clearly he wanted to get back at Stephen Ross, and he did that. So yeah. Good job. Good job with you, Brian Flores.
Who knows? Maybe Bill Belichick wanted to get back at Brady for all the tampering as well. And Brian Flores instead of Brian Daboll.
Oh,
Just, that's a fun little side story, but
I hadn't thought about that.
The theory, it's not anything concrete, obviously.
No, but I mean, it certainly helped propel.
Oops.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Brian, you know who else has been talking to talking to Stephen Ross? All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, NFC North burning questions next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The NFC North burning questions. We go through three with each team, and we start, of course, the Green Bay Packers. And the first one is obvious. I don't have the link in front of me. I'm assuming you.
I can send it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I can just Google it. We have pretty good Google search history, and it's the first item. No big deal. You didn't. I was making sure you didn't write it. Cody Benjamin wrote it.
Yeah.
And the first question is the obvious one, and it is the correct one. Like, who is going to be? Wait, this didn't appear to be.
No, it's not the right one. There was a different one this offseason. I just sent it to you. Gotcha. Jeff Kerr wrote it.
Okay, sorry. Cody wrote it from the newsletter. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Our whole it's a you know what? It's a brilliant strategy. The Green Bay Packers' first question: who's Aaron Rodgers' go-to target now that Davante Adams is gone? I have my answer. What's yours?
It's Alan Lazard for me.
Aaron Jones for me.
Okay, I like that one. I like it a lot.
Me and Dwayne McFarland of PFF and I are in agreement with this. Aaron Jones is wide receiver one for the Green Bay Packers. Now, Prisco calls me crazy. I think he's going to split. I think you're going to run AJ Dillon out of the backfield, line up Aaron Jones in the slot, put him out, you know, put two halfback sets, get him the ball in space. I think he's going to be the number one target. But yes, Alan Lazard is the number one wide receiver.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, I think for them, it would be Christian Watson, but obviously he's not healthy and he's not participating in training camp right now. So the rookie can't kind of really make that impact. Sammy Watkins in the mix, Randall Cobb, you know, those are some of the guys that are, I guess, in the discussion. But for me, it's Alan Lazard. But I do like the Aaron Jones standpoint. If we're talking about overall targets and not just like wide receiver, I kind of looked at it from that regard. But, you know, for me, Aaron Jones, absolutely. I mean, you could run him, like you're saying, in multiple different ways. You know, put him in the slot, put him
out wide,
put him out wide, motion him out there. You can even run some sort of like pony thing with Dillon on one side and Jones on the other. Like, you could get really creative, and I'm sure Matt LaFleur is already kind of doing that.
Yeah, you could do some sort of like, I mean, almost a read option, like a wishbone type. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can do. I think Aaron Jones is going to be prominently involved. I have a ton of Aaron Jones in best ball, and DFS and whatnot. Will this team find secondary depth? Jerry Alexander back, of course. They have Eric Stokes, who they drafted last year, and Rasul Douglas. Do they have enough in there, or can they find – well, will they find the depth, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, they do have already depth at the safety spot, too, in the secondary. Like, it's not – you know, you can only go so deep, right? Like, I mean, yeah, of course, you'd love to have, you know, top to bottom on your depth chart, guys that could step up in a moment's notice, but in reality, that's not the case in the NFL most of the time. But I mean, you do have Adrian Amos, you know, Darnell Savage at the safety spots. Like, you do have veteran talent, Jair Alexander, obviously, as well. And like you said, with Stokes, and Stokes is a former first round pick too. Yep. So it's like, you do have talent there, but yeah, of course, if you lose one of those pillars, then it's going to be tough regardless. Now, do they have enough? I guess we'll see. But it's not like the NFC is – it's not like they're in the AFC West.
AFC West, yeah.
Where you're just going to have these quarterbacks every single week. Yes, we do believe that the Lions and the Vikings could be better. Of course, Minnesota's, you know, increasing their pass volume with Kevin O'Connell as head coach. But ultimately, it's Green Bay versus Tampa Bay versus L.A. And I think you have enough to slow those guys down.
Yeah, you just got to be healthy. Get healthy. I mean, if a bunch of guys get injured, it won't be as good. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Speaking of injuries, the Packers' what's the offensive line going to look like? Is Cody's last question. I would actually posit that the better way to phrase that is: are these tackles healthy? Because David Bakhtiari does not sound like he's going to be ready to start the season. He's just not. I almost feel like he's just not going to be. And Elgton Jenkins, who was great last year replacing Bakhtiari, is also recovering from a torn ACL. So that's problems.
Yeah, you know, when you get your, you know, your tackles not fully confident that they'll be ready to go, obviously the alarm bell should be going off. You know, I looked at PFF's, you know, offensive line rankings and stuff like that. They have the Packers fifth, but they do put the caveat out there that health is a big factor.
It is, yeah, Bakhtiari and Jenkins have to be healthy. Yeah,
right. So like, yes, at the if everything's equal and everybody's healthy, yeah, you should be all right. But at the same time, you got about a month to kind of figure that out now, a little over a month to get healthy and be ready to go.
I mean, as of a week ago, there's, you know, Rob Domofsky of ESPN was reporting there's no timetable for Bakhtiari's return. That's a problem. I mean, I don't really know how to put it any other way. That's
less than ideal if you don't have your all pro left tackle ready for
you. Yeah. I mean, like he's, one of the five best offensive linemen in football, probably. And then Jenkins, I want to say Jenkins is probably, sounds like, yeah, he's ahead of schedule, quote, ahead of schedule, according to Brian Gutekunst, which is good.
But obviously, what does that look like coming back from an injury like that? Like, everybody reacts in so many different ways. Yes. Like, it's, you know, those knee injuries. And so, you know.
He tore his in week 11 against the Vikings. So, I mean, that's, it should be enough time to get back. But, you know, again, you're not talking like a running back. You're talking about like I think big men coming back from the torn ACL is also a little tougher sometimes.
For sure. 100%. You know, and you're going backwards. You're planting on that foot. It's a little bit different than a running back or a wide receiver. Yeah, you're making cuts, but you're not
You're on the offensive.
Yeah, exactly. You're dictating where you're going, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's
right. Where, you know, an offensive lineman, you're backtracking. You're kind of reacting, and it's a little bit different of emotion for them. So, yeah, I think in trusting it is a whole other thing. You know what I mean? Like, you can have the training camp reps and all that stuff and work out and trust that knee to make those cuts. It's a, you know, you're talking about a much heavier body trying to make that cut and make that plant in the ground.
And we've seen guys like Julian Edelman and Joe Burrow, both of whom are like afraid of nothing. And both who look tentative coming off of their, you know, the ACL injuries where they, you can just see it. I mean, it's just, it's natural for an athlete to, you know, to the ACL to be in your head a little bit. So yeah, I think offensive line is the offensive line one is the most important one to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to the Vikings. Number one, can Kevin O'Connell get Kirk Cousins to the next level? Interesting question.
I think he's more efficient.
Level? Does he have a next level?
Yeah, like I don't know if, like, you know, all of a sudden Kirk Cousins is going to be Kirk Cousins plus or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. Like
streaming subscription service.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think he's going to be better. I think the offense as a whole is going to be better, or they should be a little bit more pass happy, which will obviously increase his statistics and stuff like that. But like, I don't know if all of a sudden it's going to make Kirk Cousins this like clutch playoff, you know, contending type of quarterback that's going to, you know, lead the franchise that you feel more confident in going into these like primetime games and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if it's going to change the narrative that much, but I do think with the weapons around him that, yeah, and the way that they change the offense. I mean, you know, at the baseline, if Kevin O'Connell just likes Kirk Cousins, it's a step up from where he was a year ago with his head coach and Mike Zimmer, who clearly did not like him. And right. it's gonna change the approach, I think, as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Just don't hate your head coach.
So I mean, that helps.
You're already at like an advantage over what you had from previous years. Yeah, I just don't know that there's. I don't know what the. I mean, he's coached with Cousins before. I mean, I think you can see like statistically the numbers just go up because the Vikings are being more aggressive passing the ball. But I mean, I don't know. There's like a, yeah, Kirk Cousins plus. I like that. I don't think there's a Kirk Cousins plus. Will the offensive line be any better for the Vikings? Christian Darrisaw slotting at left tackle. My man Garrett Bradbury at center, Ezra Cleveland is there. They've invested a ton of money into this. I think when you look at it, the scheme that O'Connell runs actually will be, will be pretty similar to, you know, like not similar, but like it will ask similar things from the offensive line as Gary Kubiak's scheme did, or Clint Kubiak's scheme did. And so maybe the fact that they're a little undersized, you know, drafting for that scheme won't hurt them quite as much with this shift.
Yeah. And also just, I think the change in philosophy too offensively will help them being a little bit more pass happy on like first and second down. I don't think it's going to be, you know, as conservative of an offense, which I think will help relieve some of the pressure of the offensive line, especially if O'Connell is emphasizing a little bit more of, you know, quick passes, moving the ball, tempo. I think that that's going to help. But this is an offensive line that, you know, again, PFF ranks 19th overall. So you're still within the top 20 in the league, but it's not like you have this.
They're not. Yeah, they're not
this dynamo of a front.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah,
they're fine.
It's passable.
Yeah. If O'Connell coaches them up and the offensive line's better, then that's how you get Kirk Cousins plus or
sure.
Or more big efficient. Big stats Kirk or something like that. Did the secondary improve enough? The Vikings brought in Lewis Cine at 32nd overall and Andrew Booth, who I think has been flashing in camp so far. Unless I'm thinking of a different Clemson standout. I'm pretty sure it's Andrew Booth that I saw that they were like, yeah, he like made some like great one-handed interception. They all brought back our colleague Patrick Peterson. They also have Mackenzie Alexander, also a Clemson product. Oh no, he left. No, Alexander left and Xavier Woods left. Sorry. And then they added Chandon Sullivan. So maybe enough to get better.
Yeah, I think that if the rookies pop like we think that they might, then yeah, of course, I think that they're going to be a little bit better. I mean, I liked both selections in the first and second round. I thought Booth, you know, I think Wilson had him multiple times in the first round as a prospect in his mock drafts leading up to the draft last year. And he was somebody that, you know, from, you know, up here in New England following the Patriots, that was somebody who a lot of people kind of circled. And Wilson was one of them at times during his mocks as someone who could legitimately come into the league and maybe be one of those starting outside corners. And so, yeah, I mean, if you find somebody like that with Pat P on the, you know, kind of leading that young group, I think that's certainly going to help.
Yeah. You would hope it gets better. If the defense improves, and I don't necessarily think that it will, just because I think there's drop off from Mike Zimmer to Ed Donatell.
Yeah,
big time.
I think it's you know, as much as we're talking about the offense getting the uptick because of Zimmer's absence, I think you're getting a little bit of a step down with the defense.
The only way is if like these new additions and they're healthy, and these new additions make huge impacts. Like then maybe you could see it where the defense improves and the Vikings are just a good team.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's like the offense takes a step forward. Defense probably takes a step back, at least for this first year. All right. This is tough. Do you Lions or Bears next?
No, are you with
Bears? It's a slap. That's right. It's a slap in the face of the Lions. We're going Lions next because the Bears are the worst team in this division. How good can this offense be for Detroit?
I think kind of like not, I don't want to say really good, but like surprisingly good, I think is a fair way to say that. I mean, if St. Brown is the guy that we saw towards the tail end of last season and Hawkinson gets healthy and Swift has the breakout that we've all been anticipating and Jared Goff is just a baseline manager of a quarterback with a good offensive line in front of him, I mean, there's really not much more than you can ask for. And we're not even talking about Jameson Williams coming into this equation if he's healthy. So, you know, there's a lot to like there. There's a lot of weapons. I think that this could be pretty good.
Yeah. I Jameson Williams is probably not going to be back right away. Like, it does sound like they're going to legit take the slow roll him. So, you know, maybe he's not as big an impact guy as I thought he would be, but I'm fine with that. Like, you don't need to rush him back at all.
No,
like,
you got to also be realistic of where you are as a franchise. It's not like you're, all right, this is our Super Bowl year. You're not the Buffalo Bills where it's, you know, the betting favorite, you know, it's time to go all in. You're still building something. You're still moving forward in your kind of ascent. And you don't want to, you know, ruin a guy for 2022 that is supposedly part of your long-term plan. I mean, you did trade up significantly to get this guy. So, you know, let's not ruin him and rush him out of the gate.
Yeah. The other thing too is like I tell you what, you look at this setup they got. Like, they got a bunch of former first round picks on the offensive line who are, you know, getting a little older, and Frank Ragnow and Taylor Decker. They, but like Penei Sewell looks the part. You know, Like that offensive line looks like it could be legit. TJ Hockenson's a stud. Jameson Williams could be a monster. Amon St. Brown feels like he's going to be continue to be great. And DJ Chark's a nice little addition there. Plus DeAndre Swift. I mean, like, I don't know what their plan is with Jared Goff. I would assume they're going to draft somebody at some point. But like this offense is ready to have a quarterback dropped in and have them thrive if this is the right guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too is, you know, as much as we're, you know, kind of projecting here with Swift and, you know, in Brian St. Brown and stuff like that, it's not like we're doing this out of nothing either. It's not like Williams where we're like, yeah, maybe he'll be all right. Like, we'll see what he looks like. There is a proven track record of all of these guys, when right, legitimately being weapons. I mean, we talk about, you know, the Fantasy Football Today guys are talking about Swift as a huge breakout this year. And yeah, you know, St. Brown's a little bit lower in their rankings. But, like, if he's anywhere close to what we saw at the tail end of last year.
He looked the part last year.
It's, you know, you're talking about a legit threat that defenses need to account for. So all it really revolves around is if Goff can kind of be just a stable, not shoot yourself in the foot type of quarterback, which he's shown he can be during his career. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. And the other thing, and I know we've talked about it over the course of last season, Detroit was just a tough out. I mean, you look at the spread, you know, the ATS record, they were a great bet all season, pretty much. They lost a ton of heartbreakers, but they were in all these games and they were playing hard for Dan Campbell. And if that continues into 2022, they'll again be a tough out. The record might not be great, but they will be a tough out and a better offense.
Yep. His second question was, and not to put it up, but will Jameson Williams be ready for the season? Like, no, probably not. That's easy, and he shouldn't be. The third question for the Lions, can the pass rush carry the defense? Pass rush carry the defense.
You're putting a lot on Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, sure is, because and his tiny little arms. It's him and Charles Harris. I don't think they can.
Yeah, I would probably hold that one off a little bit. I mean, again, Hutchinson's a great prospect. There's a reason why you drafted him so high. And he will be that guy at some point, but this is one of those things. Unless Campbell can really coach it up and you know, work his magic, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think the offense has to carry this team, but I do think the defense is like starting to kind of get to where there's a lot of interesting pieces on there. I mean, they have my boy Lee McNeil there, Michael Brockers. Like, that defensive line could be a problem to deal with. It's just not going to be some like elite off the edge, just, you know, just unit of destruction, I don't think.
No.
All right. The Bears. First question. Why does this team exist? Just kidding. Is Justin Fields in the right situation to succeed? No.
No. Quick answer on that one. Absolutely not. I mean, I've said to you, you know, I think that this is a good bet for, you know, lowest scoring offense in the NFL this year. I don't think that there's really a ton to love about the offense. I think it's an offensive line that's ranking at or near the bottom in the NFL. The weapons aren't anything great. I mean, you know, speaking from experience, they traded for N'Keal Harry. It's not like, you know, it's not like they're really bolstering the wide receiver room there again, you know. So I don't know who really is going to be that go-to receiver outside of Darnell Mooney for Justin Fields to be that outlet. And if you're talking about it being David Montgomery, yeah, it's just that ceiling doesn't seem particularly high to me, and the floor seems really low.
All right, let me see if I. All right, here we go. This is from Kevin Fishbane and Adam Jans of The Athletic from Bears training camp on Tuesday, August 2nd. The Bears first team offense, Lake Forest, Illinois. The Bears first team offense got two chances at a 2-minute drill, down 26-20, 1:20 on the clock, and the ball in the 20. In the first padded practice of training camp on Tuesday, they went 3 and out both times. Quarterback Justin Fields completed one pass, a flip to running back Khalil Herbert as Fields got flushed from the pocket. 6 plays, 1 completion, and lots of scrambling. Fields overthrew wide receiver Darnell Mooney on a deep ball with safety Eddie Jackson in coverage. He attempted to connect with tight end Cole Kmet down the seam, but the throw hit linebacker Nicholas Morrow in the back. On 2 other plays, Fields was evading pressure and forced to scramble. It's worth noting who he operated behind from left to right: Braxton Jones, Latavius Simmons, Cody Whitehair was getting a breather. Sam Mustipher, Michael Schofield, and Larry Borum made it the offensive line for the first series. The offense, I mean, basically, this offense sucks.
Yeah. And you hire a head coach, Matt Eberflus, who's a defensive-minded guy. It's not like you're going from Zimmer to O'Connell, and you know, to just use an example within the division where it's going to help your young quarterback out. And not only that, it's, you know, a carryover quarterback from a previous regime. I think we all are intrigued about Justin Fields and what his potential could be, but there's also that variable of, okay, does Eberflus like what he sees after 1 year? And if they are as bad as we think that they might be, are they having those conversations of finding another quarterback? It's a lot easier to make those decisions when it's from a former regime than, it, you know, and you're kind of, you know, maybe want that full reset. And if you're a, you know, a new head coach, you're going to point to the quarterback to say it was his fault, not yours, out of the gate in year one.
Yeah, and one of the things that they pointed out in this article too, like they did a little back and forth, like, should we, like, is this worth panicking about? You know, and it's like, it's early. You know, Trevor Siemian is the backup quarterback and pointed out that his first practice in pads, you don't really know what your offense would be until after the first regular season game, blah, 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 blah. But as Jan's noted, it's like the Bears secondary just might be way, way better than the Bears, like, pass catchers. But that's going to be the case almost every week for this Bears team.
Yeah.
Like they're just not going to have an advantage with pass catchers against any sort of secondary unless it's just a horrendous unit.
Yeah, unless you're playing some – yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think, like, who's the – it's just, you know, you have to play – okay, you have to – you're playing a Texans team or something. Yeah, you know,
Jaguars or
– yeah, you're just playing one of the bottom three, four, five teams in the league.
Yeah, which, I mean, maybe the secondaries are even, like, not as bad as I'm thinking. I'm just, yeah, just thinking, like – yeah, I mean, like, if the Bears' defense is overwhelming the Bears' offense, you know, the Bears' defense can be good, but it's not great. I mean,
right, right. It's honestly very similar to what I've been watching in Foxborough over the last few days of Patriots training camp. It's like the offense is struggling against the defense, where I don't think anybody was super hyped about. So it's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, is this the defense is great and the offense is going to be fine, or is this like, oh God, we are deep, deep trouble. Like the defense isn't even that good, and they're snuffing out the offense.
Exactly. So again, you know, I'm intrigued about the prospect Justin Fields. Don't love the situation he's in whatsoever. I think it's honestly going to be bad for him.
I can't fathom. I mean, like, I think he can have good fantasy stats because he runs a ton. It's hard to fathom him having a great year with the weapons right. that he has around him,
unless he's just a generational type of guy. Like he is that dude, and is going to just elevate, which I guess possible, but
would be a little weird if he, you know, I guess, I mean, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson fell and draft too. So it's possible, but yeah, that's correct. Unless he's just, he could have drag up the talent level. Remember in those two guys I'm talking about, I mean, Mahomes and, you know, Mahomes had tons of weapons and Deshaun Watson had freaking DeAndre Hopkins. The offensive line can't be worse than last year, right? Wrong.
Yeah. I think that might be wrong.
And we just read about it. I mean, like, they're rotating through every which way. It seems like this offensive line is just terrible.
And I just have PFF rankings in front of me. They're 31st, the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, they're just bad.
It's not,
like,
good.
And it, like, that ties right in with, does Justin Fields, is he in a spot to succeed? Like, right. No. He's a bad offensive line and not many weapons. Like, it's a bad spot to succeed.
It just seems, you know, again, when you have these rookie quarterbacks on rookie deals, right now, I think the best modern day version of what you're supposed to do is in Los Angeles with the Chargers. You know, you have Justin Herbert on this super cheap contract. You're surrounding him with ridiculous talent. You're going and spending in free agency. You're making these big trades over the course of an offseason to surround him, whether it be offensively or defensively. You're going out and signing Corey Linsley. You're signing JC Jackson this offseason. You're trading for Khalil Mack. That's the stuff you have to be doing. And the Chiefs have even done this too with Patrick Mahomes earlier in his career too. It's, you know, right now the Bears are in a weird spot because they have a new head coach. They have a new regime. They're kind of stripping it down before they build it up, but you only have so much time with these quarterbacks on these rookie deals too. So you have to make them count to some regard.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just a bad spot for Fields.
Yeah. It's a really, really tough spot. All right. Finally, what's the future with Robert Quinn? The longtime veteran, a pass rusher, rumored to be a possible trade candidate. Doesn't really fit with the Bears timeline at all, but I think he likes it in Chicago. Although, you know, they got a new coaching staff, so who knows? Seems like an obvious trade candidate to me.
That's what I was going to say is, you know, the timeline thing. I guess you just have to be honest with yourself in terms of what you are as a franchise. Like, what are you going to do? Like, are you going to rebuild it? And I know, you know, he's a great player and everything like that, but you could, he's valuable to other teams, and you could get some assets to continue your rebuild. It's not like you're going to, you know, restart your entire franchise with a Robert Quinn trade, I don't think. Like, it's not, nothing like that. But at the same time, I don't know what he really does for 2022 that's going to make a huge difference to what their, I think their record's going to end up being.
Yeah. If
that's the case, then just move off and get whatever assets you can.
Exactly. It feels like they should get what they can get for Robert Quinn now. Like you did with Khalil Mack. You know, there's no reason for this Bears team to try to pretend like they're competing if you're trading Khalil Mack for 2 second round picks.
Yeah.
You know, like get what you can get for Robert Quinn, because there's somebody out there that needs pass rush help. And he piled up sacks last year. Like, he's very capable still of getting sacks. So it felt like the Bears are at least like cognizant of that, in the same way, you know, we said with the Lions, like, you know who you are, right? Quinn does have $17 million cap hit. You can kind of get out of it. You can get out of this contract pretty easily, but I don't think you're getting a whole lot in value back for him.
And what'd you say his cap hit was?
$17.137 million.
I mean, you're only really looking at, like, if I'm looking at this right, like the Browns, the Cowboys, and the Raiders, and Panthers maybe, teams that could absorb that right now. But I don't know. I mean, the Cowboys could make a splashy move. That, I guess, it would be fun. But
yeah, that would be very Cowboys of them. Yeah, I mean, it does feel like does feel like this is a trade opportunity. If maybe he can restructure or something like that.
Sure. And like, I'm like, you know, just to hammer it home, like, I don't know what Robert Quinn is going to do to change the win loss record of the 2022 Chicago Bears. And if they feel that same way, then you should probably just move on and see what you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Speaking of moving on, let's move on for this podcast. The Bears aren't fun to talk about. No offense, Bears fans. They hate me, my family. I hate you too. Just kidding. I don't want the Bears to be bad. I just think they're not. I just don't think they're good.
Well, quickly, what did you think of their alternate helmets?
Oh, the orange? I like that.
Yeah. See, I don't know if I liked it. So there you go. So now you're on the good side of the Bears.
Fans. I said something nice about
your team.
There you go. Yeah. All right.
Looks like two Browns.
That's it for 2022. That's all you get. All right. For Sully, I'm Britson. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys later.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.